So good to be back with you for another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, James Turk from GoldMoney.com and co-author of the latest bestseller, The Money Bubble. Well, it's a pleasure to welcome James Turk, founder of GoldMoney.com and co-author of The Money Bubble, a new bestseller on Amazon. Welcome back, James Turk.
Thank you, Chris.
You know, we wanted to talk, if we could, today about a top story here. The European Central Bank cut interest rates to record lows, and this is imposing negative rates on overnight depositors. The ECB dropped its rate, its benchmark there, to negative 0.1%. And some folks are claiming that this is reminiscent of the BOJ's battle with deflation. You know, when the Fed tried something similar, it helped to spark one of the sharpest gold rallies in decades, and the markets rallied on the news. Please tell us more and what you think about this.
Yeah, it's not too surprising. We saw good rallies in both gold and silver after the ECB announcement. And basically what that's telling us is that the European Central Bank has taken steps to debase the value of the euro. You know, they think that by debasing the currency, they're going to stimulate economic activity. But you've got to look at this logically, Chris. You know, over the past several years, they've dropped interest rates basically to zero, and economic activity has not been stimulated. The Eurozone is still having economic difficulties, record high unemployment rates, barely registering any kind of growth whatsoever. Some countries are actually contracting. So by lowering interest rates even into negative territory, is it really going to make a difference? It probably won't help economic activity, but as we saw with regards to the big bounces, the big moves in gold and silver after the announcement, it is definitely going to help the precious metals. And the reason is that this was a clear message that the ECB is trying to lower the value of the euro, lower the purchasing power of the euro. And if you're lowering the purchasing power of the euro, you have to look for alternatives. And obviously the precious metals are a good alternative.
To return here to the U.S., domestic economic reports seem to be improving, and that looks like it's sending money flows away from safe havens and into the U.S. equities markets, which have just been the investment du jour now for quite some time. U.S. durable goods orders rose in April, as we learned last week. Initial jobless claims improved. I mean, the Fed is also paring back its monthly asset purchases to $45 billion, the fourth straight $10 billion cut, or taper, as they're calling it. Can you tell us what improved conditions on this side of the pond might mean in the context of your first response?
You know, the stock market is not rising because of good economic conditions or nor because of any rosy economic outlook. I mean, the economic outlook looks bleak. The U.S. is actually finally, the government numbers are showing that the U.S. was in a recession in the first quarter. And it could very well be in a recession, negative GDP growth, or very close to negative GDP growth in this current quarter. So the stock market is rising not because of the economy. It's rising because of what the Federal Reserve is doing. The Federal Reserve is printing more money, and that money has to go somewhere. This is what in Austrian School of Economics is called the crack-up boom. You know, people flee the currency, and they go into things. So you're seeing, for example, Chris, not just in the States, but the dollars are being created flowing throughout the globe. So you have real estate here in London going to record highs. You have real estate in Singapore going to record highs because these are perceived safe havens. You've got records in collectibles, antique cars, paintings, and things of that nature. When you go into certain types of stocks, you know, stocks that deal in commodities or stocks that deal in things as opposed to financial stocks, a near tangible in the sense that if you own Exxon, you don't necessarily own an oil well, but you own a company that owns oil wells. And, you know, oil is going to continue to be valuable in the future, regardless of what happens to economic activity. So that's the safe haven logic as to why the stock market's going up. But the reality is it's just going up because the Federal Reserve is printing. And even though they've reduced the amount of, you know, QE that they're doing, they're still doing far too much. And the consequence of that is that, you know, the dollar is being debased, just like the ECB is debasing the euro.
You know, this is such a salient point, and I wonder if you could let our listeners today know some of these actions that you're referring to behind the scenes, because, you know, all we hear about is the tapering. But on the other hand, that balance sheet remains stubbornly high and looks as though it's positioned to breach the $5 trillion mark sometime in the near future.
Personally, I think there's a lot of panic going on behind the scenes because the central banks pretty much around the world are unable to respond to the economic conditions. All of the theories that they're following are completely bogus. Because they don't really work in this present environment. They're built on faulty logic anyway, so it's not a surprise that they don't work. You know, what government should be doing is encouraging economic activity in the private sector, because after all, the private sector is where the wealth is created. You know, governments don't create wealth. They just take wealth from the private sector and redistribute it. And the problem that we have in the States and the problem that we have in Euroland, and many other countries around the world as well, is that governments have become so big that, you know, all of the feathers have been plucked from the golden goose, which is the private sector. You know, there's nothing left for the private sector to give, and given the regulatory environment, tax environment, and all of the other problems that businesses confront these days, there's just not enough money to go around to support this huge infrastructure that governments have built. And venture planners are unwilling to recognize that this system is no longer working. They're trying to do all kinds of things to keep this old system working, but it's not working. And ultimately, my view, Chris, is it's laid out in the money bubble and the dollar, the coming collapse of the dollar before that, is that we are in a money bubble. People just have lost sight as to what money really is. What we call money today is not really money. It's just a money substitute circulating in place of money. Money, of course, being gold and silver, physical gold and physical silver.
Your idea of a bloated government is such a cogent point, and one that's overlooked by so many in the mainstream. For instance, if we look at the United States, take it as the case study, roughly half of Americans receive some type of federal assistance. Now, keep in mind, a check each month, over 160 million Americans receive from the federal government. It's as though the parasite has gone from a symbiotic relationship to a far more nefarious one, threatening the host on which it requires its own subsistence and survival. Could you tell us more?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You really described it perfectly. And just to put some numbers on it, to put it into perspective, government now, as a percentage of the U.S. economy, is higher today than it was during the height of World War II, when the whole country was on a war footing. Now, think about that. It's more government today than we had during the peak of World War II. It's just not sustainable. And, you know, what the central bankers are trying to do is to try to continue this system, which is no longer sustainable. They're fiddling around with all kinds of things, negative interest rates and quantitative easing, et cetera, in the hope that they're going to stimulate economic activity. But the point is they're missing the important point, is that the system has reached its shelf life. It is no longer sustainable. There's too much debt. There's not enough wealth being created. So it's not surprising that standards of living in the States and elsewhere are generally declining.
Although it's not a perfect analogy, if one might imagine that the shoeshine person who is there to make sure that the CEOs and the executives are presentable each day, earning as much if not more than the executives themselves. As you say, it's just simply unsustainable for the government, which essentially provides services that should be there in place to support the business community, which of course is the engine of all growth and the engine of all output that even supports our military and every other function of the country. So I think you made a great point, but I don't want to harp on it too much. Let's move on to geopolitical tensions. I have family in London, and folks in that part of the world keep a very close eye on their backyard. And of course, Ukraine is a pseudo-European country, at least on the periphery. I wonder if you might tell folks a bit more of what you see happening there between Ukraine and Russia, please.
Yeah, they're not really making any progress in terms of resolving the differences. You know, instead of focusing on making sure everybody has equal rights under the law, it's turned into a Balkan type of situation where people are fighting because of ethnic differences and things of that nature. So it's probably going to get messier before it gets better, which is sort of sad. But, you know, because you bring up the geopolitical issue, there's actually a bigger thing happening that I'm not sure is getting a lot of attention in the States, but it's got a lot of attention over here in Europe, is that just recently Russia and China signed a huge, huge natural gas deal, which is sort of a shifting of geopolitical power of, you know, I think real significance in a couple of different ways. First of all, China is going to be getting energy from Russia. But secondly, and more importantly, this is a multi-year deal, a multi-decade deal, actually. And you just know that that deal is not being priced in U.S. dollars. They've not announced what the pricing is, but it's either rubles or yuan or a combination of the two. It's just another, you know, nail in the coffin for the U.S. dollar that nobody wants to participate in the U.S. dollar system anymore for fear of the consequences, because the dollar is no longer a neutral tool in commerce. It's been made a political weapon.
Petrodollar arrangement is crumbling right before our very eyes. Dollar hegemony eroding at a rapid clip. And I think very apropos to point out that they didn't announce whether or not it was what the currency would be. But maybe the time is not too far off that no currency is available for this arrangement, that folks will only settle in gold. Despite the fact that the yuan and perhaps ruble are relatively stable currencies, they're all fiat currencies.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it gets to the heart of the theme in the money bubble. You know, goods and services pay for goods and services. You cannot walk into a shop and pay for something with credit and expect the shopkeeper to have actually received payment. If he receives credit, he doesn't actually get payment until he takes that credit and goes out and buys some good or service. In other words, tangible assets pay for tangible assets. And what we're using today in the world with all of these fiat currencies is just credit of the banking system, credit of governments, credit of central banks. It's not actually extinguishing payments. And you've got this huge buildup of debt. And the debt itself is in part backing the currency system rather than real tangible things. So to me, the system is very fragile, and I'm sure we've discussed this in the past, but you know, I always like to bring it up. It's like in the late 1960s, just before the collapse of the central banking cartel called the London Gold Pool. You know, they kept the gold price at $35 an ounce, by just hoarding tons and tons. In fact, 10,000 tons of gold came out of Fort Knox at $35 an ounce to try to keep the market there before they finally threw in the towel, because they knew that you can't, as powerful as governments are, they can't overpower the free market, because you know free markets rely on things of value, and ultimately a price goes up or a price goes down because of how the free market responds and what the perception of value is of that particular item. So you know we're like it is in the late 1960s. You know the system is unsustainable. The trouble, Chris, is you just can't predict when it's going to happen. So what you have to do is basically just, you know, keep preparing for it and getting ready for it. The best way to do that is to own physical gold or physical silver or other types of physical assets, be it farmland, oil wells, mines, timberland, or companies, equities of companies that have ownership of tangible assets. Because in the end, when this collapse comes, it's going to be like 2008, but worse, because there's a lot more credit outstanding today than there was back in 2008.
You know, I think it's well said. And folks who seem to be less astute in the area, they want to paper over the possibility that there's really never been a situation, all global currencies, that this could come like a thief in the night this time around.
The point you're making is a good one, that you know all global currencies are fiat. And when people lose faith in fiat currency, it'll happen quickly. And those consequences will be one for the history books.
I'd really like your comments on the London silver market fixing. I'm sure you heard in the past couple of weeks that they'll no longer publish the London silver fixing, and this was a global benchmark used to price silver. It was essentially a conference call between Deutsche Bank, HSBC, and, of course, the Bank of Nova Scotia. According to a Wall Street Journal article, this is quite an interesting sea change event, and some folks are calling it similar to the LIBOR rigging situation, that perhaps we could see the gold fix be the next monopoly to crumble. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, I think that's a very good possibility. The fact that Barclays Bank was fined £26 million just recently for manipulating the gold price during the gold fix shows that the fix as it's presently being operated is antiquated. There is a need for a reference point during the course of the day that's public, transparent, and most importantly, a reference point where people can actually deal on in physical metal, and people who sell short physical metal in the fix actually have to have that physical metal on hand rather than just putting in a piece of paper saying they're going to deliver the physical metal at a future date. So there is a need for that reference point, and I'm hopeful that the LBMA, the Bank of England, or whoever will come up with a solution using present-day technology rather than something that goes back to the 1920s.
Very good. Well, James Turk, we want to thank you, and I know the listeners are going to appreciate your comments. So would you like to share any contact information?
I'm available through goldbunny.com. There's a lot of material there that basically provides what my views are on the precious metals. And as always, Chris, it's a real pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.